Okay, it's Rusty. We're up here in Sonoma Mountain at Hensel with Michael McNeil, the winemaker. It's just an absolutely glorious day. And we're going to talk a little bit about Hensel, and I think the best place to start is the history. Certainly, when you talk about historic California wineries, Hensel is a name that comes to mind. So fill me in, Michael.
It all started back when Ambassador James Ellerbach was in Europe administering the Marshall Plan. While he was there, he fell in love with the wines of Burgundy, and it became his dream to make wines here in California that would compete with the very best of Burgundy. And to him and to us, that meant ageability. So he purchased this property here above the town of Sonoma in the Guayacamas Mountains. He purchased this 200 acres, and in 1953, he planted 2 acres of Chardonnay and 4 acres of Pinot Noir, which are still here and still producing. As his homage to Burgundy, the winery that they built in 1957 is a two-thirds scale mirror image of the press house at Clos Vougeot, which is the 14th century building that the monks built at Vougeot. And in 57, he had hired, actually before 57, he hired Brad Webb as his winemaker. Brad Webb came out of the lab at Gallo, and they went about making these wines. And the great thing about the relationship between Brad Webb and Ambassador Zellerbach is Ambassador Zellerbach knew manufacturing. He came from the Crown Zellerbach paper fortune, and he knew manufacturing. He understood manufacturing and the capital investment that it took. And Brad was really a chemist and a real great scientist. And because they had both understood that scientific method and all that, and because Zellerbach had the wherewithal, they went ahead and built the very first temperature-controlled stainless steel fermentation tanks in the world. And when you look at the history, you see many firsts that were developed and implemented here at Hensel, things that we think of as being standard operating procedure nowadays. The use of nitrogen as an inert gas to blanket the headspaces to prevent oxidation, the use of a pure culture of malolactic bacteria to inoculate the fermentations, the use of French oak barrels to age wines in, barrel fermentation of Chardonnay, et cetera, et cetera. They were really started here and developed here. And like the California wine industry owes Brad Webb. He doesn't get as much notoriety as many, but he was really on the forefront, cutting edge of what is now common practice here.
So take it from there. Let's talk about where Hensel's at today and how far they've come.
The history of Hensel is interesting going forward. Ambassador Zellerbach passed away in 1961 suddenly, and his wife Hannah, who the winery is named after, Hannah Zellerbach Hensel, was a socialite in San Francisco and really wanted nothing to do with farming in a small podunk town of Sonoma. So she sold the property to the Day family, who expanded some of the vineyards and kept the tradition of the wine style alive. They hired Bob Sessions at that point. Brad was still consulting. Hired Bob Sessions in 1973. And they then sold the property to the DeBrie family in 1975. They expanded the vineyards further in 1976 and still owned by the DeBrie family. Bob Sessions, not enough can be said about his maintenance of the property, maintenance of the style, really faithfully caring forward the style that had been set here, and just running the property and maintaining these vineyards. I've been here now 2 years. My predecessor, Michael Therrien, started in 2005. One of the easy parts in terms of transition here is that Michael Therrien was kept on as a consultant for a year, but our blending trials and tasting panels, Michael Therrien sits in on, Bob Sessions is there, and actually his predecessor, Kim Giles, sits in on as well. I mean, this goes back to 1967. So there's a long history of wine making in that room when we're putting wines together.
You mentioned style.
It's really about ageability, and I think it's easy to just talk about that, but I think Hanzel really puts its money where its mouth is, so to speak, and you know, the wines early on are quite well-structured, lots of tannin, which is not common nowadays for Pinot Noir. People don't think of Pinot Noir with big structures from California. They're usually quite lush and opulent and ready to drink. Our Chardonnays we make with the mind that they need to be able to go at least 10 years. Pinots, 15, 20 plus, and I've personally had some going back 40 and with little sign of decay. They're just spectacular examples of Pinot Noir, not just from California, but from anywhere. And I also think about, in terms of style, what's unique about Hanzel is that, I mean, obviously it is about the vineyard and the site, which is unique. But because there's such a strong tradition of ageability, it's really not about the winemaker. It's about the site and the style that's been established and maintaining it, which is really, you know, much more of an old world you know, process or take on winemaking.
What's unique about the site?
A few things. One is the soils we have here. It's a Red Hill series clay loam. This is up in the Mayacamas Mountain Range, and so it is volcanic in origin. But there's enough clay in the soil to, you know, back in 1953, we didn't have drip irrigation, so there needed to be enough water holding capacity in the soil to establish the vines. We do have drip irrigation now. But, you know, we're also here at elevation. It's, the vineyards range from about 450 feet up to 800 feet in elevation. In the property, saddles a ridgetop. We have, so we have vineyards basically west, southwest facing. The ridge is slightly south facing, and then on the opposite side, on the east side, is all east facing slopes. So typically we have the Pinot planted up top and on those east facing slopes, so they aren't blasted by the afternoon heat that does occur here. And because we're at elevation, we tend to get a lot breezier than down on the valley floor. We do feel those breezes coming through the Petaluma Gap, as you can feel right now.
Regarding the Chardonnay, what clones do you have planted here?
Well, the original planting came from Stony Hill, from the Craze. So it is ultimately the Wente clone, but it's been here long enough that it's now referred to as the Hanzel clone or Hanzel selection. We've propagated that even in our newest plantings. But we do have a few other clones as well that were planted in 1998. We've got a little bit of Robert Young, some Hyde selection, as well as clone 76, Dijon selection, and clone 95, as well as a little bit of other Old Wente selection. Most of the rootstock here is St. George, which is not as popular now. At least it fell out of favor. All of the plantings up to 1976 were on St. George, but we also have some that were planted in 2001 that we went back to the St. George. Interestingly enough, this last year, you couldn't find St. George. You couldn't buy it in a nursery because it was all sold out. Turns out that St. George rootstock doesn't express virus as much as most other rootstocks. And because it is so drought tolerant, water is becoming a much bigger issue here in California. So people are, growers are looking, going back and looking at St. George as being a good alternative. And it's worked out very well for us here. It does require a bit more vineyard management in terms of canopy management, especially when the vines are young. But we've certainly seen that they allow the vines to live long, healthy, productive lives.
And what about Pinot Noir?
Again, everything up until 1976 is on St. George. We even have a little of the next planting was in 1999, the Benny's and Sessions Vineyard. We have a little bit of St. George planted, but we also planted some other rootstocks as well. 3309, 110R, and 420A. As far as the clonal selection, it's a Mount Eden clone that was planted here in 53. Like the Chardonnay, we propagated from the vineyard here, and then in 99, again, we planted some more of the Hanzel selection, but we also planted 115, 667, 777, and then Pomard, Badensville, Swan. So gives me plenty of things to play with.
And how many bottlings do you do of Pinot Noir? Is it one estate bottling?
It's basically one estate bottling, the Hanzel wine. Although I should back up, we in 2008 we bottled a small bottling of our companion label, which is called Sabella, hasn't been released yet. And from time to time, when the vintage speaks to the quality that we want to set it aside, we will bottle some of the 1953 vineyard as separate. We did so in 2003 and again in 2007. The Chardonnay we bottled in 2005 and 2007. We did not bottle it separate in 2008. So it's not something that you'll see every year, but just when we feel the quality from this particular block stands out. And that is the oldest Pinot Noir that is oldest continuously producing vineyard in North America, and the oldest Chardonnay vineyard in California.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we're going to taste some later.
Yeah. You must feel very lucky to be here.
I have my dream job. Yes, it's. I feel a lot like the prodigal son, because when I learned how to make Chardonnay and Pinot Noir, fell in love with Pinot Noir when I was working at Chalon Vineyard back in the early and mid-90s with Michael Michaud. And, you know, back in the day, when you talked about age-worthy Burgundian-style Chardonnay and Pinot Noir, it was Chalon, Calera, and Hanzel. So I feel, you know, I left Chalon and went up to Oregon and down the Central Coast, and most recently at Keller Estate, but I really feel like I've come back home, and it's my dream job.
Going back to the winemaking again, you talked about the emphasis on ageability. How do you craft, what do you do differently? Obviously, the material, the great material you have makes a difference, but what do you do in the winery that creates wines of ageability?
To start with, the vineyard selection that we have does tend to produce quite tannic wines. I mean, there's a lot of tannin between the skins and the seeds.
Do you use whole cluster?
Historically, there was whole cluster used. I'll show it to you later, but the original destemmer had these really sharp-toothed crushers in them. I refer to it as the must grinder. And the fermentations were kept cool, and they were relatively short, and made very, very hard tannic wines. When we built a new winery, the extension, we replaced the destemmer with much more moderated Delta E2, and which is a very, very gentle destemmer. So we didn't have that sort of pre-maceration of the skins. So we do a post-fermentation maceration of the grapes. At an elevated temperature. So, we'll have macerations going as long as a month. And it helps build that structure. So we're getting it on the backsides of the front side of the fermentation. That being said, one of the things that we're now looking at in the winery is basically going back and looking at doing some whole cluster, cooler fermentations, possibly crushing the fruit ahead of time. And you'll see with our setup, we have lots of little one-ton fermenters that allows us to do lots of experimentation. Previous to this, we were keeping all of our clonal and rootstock combinations from the Sessions vineyard. We have 11 different sublocks, and we were keeping all of those separate through until bottling. And selection and rootstock selection that work here. So now we're going back and looking at some of the fermentation parameters and see how that plays a role in developing the structures that we want to see. The other thing we do is we have we bottle at higher SO2 levels. We age the wines for a full 18 months in barrel, which is not as common anymore. So I think it's, we could talk a lot. Also, the other thing I'd like to point out is having the backing of the ownership to create wines in this style, because I think it's really easy to, especially in these economic times, to say, well, let's try and make the wine a little bit more opulent and get the better score in the press and get the accolades up front. But to have the fortitude to maintain that sense of trueness to the site